Welcome to the world of the internet.
Thanks for having me.
So, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Introduce yourself, what you do, kind of a bit about Whereby for those of us in the United States who probably haven't heard of it as much.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm 40 years old, entrepreneur for the most of my life, to be honest. Always been interested in building just about anything, right? But turned out that building companies was one of the things that I did well. And right now, my entire life is tied into Whereby that you and I are using right now. So thank you so much for using the platform. Greatly appreciate that.
Least I can do. If I did this over Zoom, I would feel like a monster.
Well, I have a funny story about that because we have quite a lot of investors interested in the company right now, and you get these cold outreaches, and they can't speak highly enough of Whereby and how much they love it, and then they ask, "Do you mind jumping on a Zoom call to discuss your plan?" And it's sort of like, "Yeah, maybe not, but I can definitely meet you over Whereby. That's easy."
That's amazing, honestly. Yeah, I gotta say, I had never heard of it. And then we had Peter Levels on here. I think you know him. And he and I were chatting, and he was like, "Oh, can we use Whereby?" I said, "Never heard of it, but sure." It's like scary how simple it was. And I've used it since with friends because we've had that problem because I don't have an iPhone, so I can't like FaceTime people. And everyone always wants to FaceTime. So now I just send them a Whereby link, and it's way easier because I don't have to like everybody always got mad at me for making them download Zoom. So this
Yeah,
is a
exactly.
big win, big win. I have a
Yeah.
lot of respect for the UX.
No, and that's something that we put a tremendous amount of effort and focus into, right? So the ease of use is one thing, but we also want to keep the design and the layout and basically the options rather limited, right? So we genuinely believe that there is so much innovation to be had in this space just by catering more to the users themselves, right? It's been very, very tech focused now for the last 6, 7 years. I've been in video conferencing for coming up on 11 years, right? And it's always been extremely tech focused. How can you do this? How can you do that? Right? Very much about features. But I think sometimes we lose the sight of what's the most important thing, which is obviously the users, right? Our game is trying to make it a delightful experience and spending time on video when that makes sense, when you actually can reach the desired outcome and what you're trying to achieve. We also believe that we'll see a blowback because right now people are spending way too much time over video. But I can go on a whole rant about that, so I'll try and avoid that.
Hey man, if there's a time and place to do it, you're more than welcome to go off here.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. I definitely look at this and I don't know, it feels like, at least from like the outside perspective, like you guys kind of live and die by the UX, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah, very much so. And that's a constant battle as well, right? Internally in the company, where you have the need to move fast. And obviously, there's a tremendous amount of traction in this market right now. But as you probably know, the less complicated experience for the user, the more focus you have on ease of use, the more complicated it actually is on the back end, right? So there is so much work that goes into making this a good experience. And we do not compromise. It's the key thing for us constantly.
Oh, where are you, by the way, at the moment?
So I'm actually based on the west coast of Norway, full on winter wonderland up here now. So, and you're in Chicago?
Yeah, I was gonna say you and me both. I woke up today, it was -2 degrees Fahrenheit.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's freezing. And because you live because of the lakes as well, right? So it gets freezing close to Chicago, right?
Yeah, I keep the windows closed and the heat on. Those
I
two things are a guarantee. Yeah, we have some
guess.
people watching from West Coast of Norway as well that are very excited to see you here.
Yeah, all right, cool. Shout out to the Norwegians out there.
Yeah, so that's super interesting. You were in, I don't know if I read right, you were in Boston for a time, right?
Yeah, it was. We had the history of Whereby is pretty complicated and a bit
Right.
different
Video
for
Nora
sure.
and then progression.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah. So we actually brought Videonor to the US and I led the initiatives. So I moved to Boston in 2014, late 2014, I believe. And we decided that we needed to make it in America like everyone hopes to do. To be fair, we failed quite miserably, to be honest, right? That was such a good learning experience. But we totally underestimated the value of having a brand and some sort of awareness. We followed the playbook, right? We set up an inside sales team. We had BDRs and account executives, and we got into quite a lot of deals. but found that we were more or less just used for benchmarking. So we could never actually close the number of deals that we needed to become very successful. So it was sort of like, okay, but nothing major. And then we just decided, okay, that's not gonna work. And the problem with the business model as well was that it didn't scale properly. So one thing was that the tech didn't really scale at the levels that we wanted. And something that's always frustrated me in my earlier career as well, and especially in the Videonor days, where you had a sales team that was working through partners. You train partners and the sales reps, and then they go out in the market. And it's such a difficult thing to get right, because we sorely missed the feedback directly from the users. So when the opportunity with what was formerly known as a pair in now whereby came along, that was just so much more exciting for us, right? Because you had almost like an indefinitely scalability in terms of the tech, and not to mention everything that we have is self-serve, right? So users sign up much like you do a Spotify subscription or Netflix. So the feedback that we get from the users is almost constant. So we can take that and then reiterate and test things and just do so many things much faster with direct feedback from the users. And that's something that's super exciting when you've been in that sales model where you're so far removed from actually the end user.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The direct sales is just such a nightmare in a lot of scenarios. And
it really
if it's
is.
Not you, it gets even worse.
It's absolutely true, right? And the biggest issue we had, and again, so many learnings, but we didn't have enough inbound leads. So it was more or less totally outbound. And that is one of the most complicated things you can do, right? Unless you have a killer product, it's almost impossible. So now it's much more exciting when we have, for Whereby, we have also something that's growing super fast, which is Whereby Embedded, where we allow customers to take, they get access to our APIs, and then they can embed into their own apps or workflows or websites. And that's a whole different ballgame, right? That's such a hot market right now. So we're seeing tremendous growth of just about, it started with healthcare and ed tech and events, but now we're seeing that it's exploding across so many verticals where people are moving sort of like customer-facing engagement digitally. So it changes the game, right? Because if you can embed video just by the click of a button, it's so powerful. So that's something very exciting. And then we're seeing on that one, there is just a tremendous amount of inbound leads. And it's such a different ballgame closing inbound leads compared to chasing outbound.
It's life-changing. Yeah. No, yeah. Peter, like during our conversation, like he swears by organic. He will live and die by organic, and a lot of people will, and they kind of argue like, if you have organic, it's proof that you're doing something right. If you don't, it's proof that you're either doing something wrong or at least trying to climb Mount Everest, you know, with a single hammer.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. I totally agree. And we've seen massive growth, as you can imagine, during the pandemic, right? And 97% has been organic. So there's no doubt that that's a very, very powerful machine. But at the same time, when you see that there could be an opportunity because of just the crazy demand that's in the market, we've also decided now to be opportunistic. So we have a sales team that is also trying to do outbound just to see and get traction. Is there enough possibility here to actually generate? Because let's be fair, there's also quite a few companies that have made a sales machine doing outbound. So I think it all comes into timing and the quality of the product that you have, and obviously the demand that's in the market.
Yeah, no, that's definitely... I truly look up to all the people who have managed to do it successfully. Really think, like, you know, you look at people like DoorDash, right? Where they had to just go through and like talk to every restaurant individually, right? There just wasn't really much of a smarter way to do it.
Yeah.
And here they are now, right?
Yeah.
Now, granted, they did some hacks, right? They shoved themselves into there. But like when I heard that you guys had the API, I immediately was like, oh my God, that makes perfect sense. Specifically because of the way you do it, right? Your drop in, all you need is a name. And if that's your level of UX, that is a drop in tool people can use. And then, so what does that look like? How does that proceed to you getting paid someday? Can they upgrade? Yeah. Like, what does that look like? I'm curious.
So what we've done, normally what you do on these models is obviously that you pay per minute, right?
Sure.
But we've had the chance now to play along with the pricing model. Because to be fair, we started this almost, I wouldn't call it a side project, right? But we didn't really know how big this would become because it's now nearly 40% of our revenue, right? So it's just taken off like a rocket ship. Yeah. So it's super exciting. And now we have to be more mindful. We can't just play around with it like we did in the earlier days. But we were playing around with the business model and we were looking at it and saying, okay, everyone else charges by the minute. But then we said, okay, but what if you charge per participant in meeting instead? Because what we want to achieve is that our customers, because they normally use it to connect with an end user somehow, right? And we know that as soon as two people are meeting as soon as that session is started, there is actually value created at that time. Because let's be fair, right? If you can actually have hundreds of meetings where you are the only one in there, but you're counting minutes because you're waiting for the other participant to join, right? Sure. So you're burning minutes that you're paying for. But we've said we'll only start charging when there are two people in the meeting, because that's when we know our customers is getting value from what they're trying to achieve. So that has been a very interesting model overall. Still trying to validate if it's a better one than the meetings. The minutes. We're constantly evaluating if we need to change that and do stuff like that. But we're also now rolling out a freemium model, completely self-serve, which is sort of the next level now, where we know that a lot of developers want to be able to just create an account, whitelist the domain, get access to the API, and start playing with it. So super excited about that. Just a couple of more weeks and we should have that live and ready to go. So that's also something that we can then start grabbing a bigger share of the market. And to be fair, that's a very exciting one, right? When you can have that amount of users just go on and try it for free. And again, when they start to generate value and they can charge their customers for the service, that's when we can come in and say, okay, let's find a model that works for us all here, so we can also generate revenue from our side.
That's super interesting. So VideoNor, you guys, I mean, you were a decade in this industry, right? But now, yeah. Whereby is, I want to say, 2 or 3 years in for you, right? The acquisition was 2017, I think.
Exactly right. Yeah. There's sort of like an interesting thing, right? We've been, like I said, over a decade, right? And we've sort of like, the first wave of video conferencing back from 2005 to maybe 2010, 11, 12, you had these very complex, super expensive hardwares, right? That were normally set up in boardrooms, $250,000 to equip a boardroom, right? And not very much used, to be honest. And then sort of like wave number two was where you had the likes of BlueJeans and Zoom, obviously, right? And Microsoft starting to actually really take advantage of the huge advantage they had when they acquired Skype. And so then you had more sort of like what we call cloud-based, easier tools to use and starting to sort of like democratize and making it pervasive. But then now we believe that there is a third wave that has already started that we want to lead and we want to win. And that's wave number three, where you focus much more on the user as well, right? Because tech and having quality and reliability, that's now table stakes, right? That's the buy-in that you need to have that. And then you have to move it to the next level by actually starting to add a lot more value for the users themselves. And that's something that we feel is deeply lacking. Like, we're not even happy at all with what we are doing, right? We have so many plans and so many things that we want to improve, and so many things that we see that we can generate much more value to our users by just thinking about things differently and doing it a bit more challenging ourselves, to be honest, right? How can we make this super easy, very compelling, but at the same time giving the users value from this? So plenty to come still.
Definitely. Yeah. That's the thing. What I love about you guys the most is, like, I see like you interacting with people on Twitter. Right. And like, I remember like maybe a month ago, somebody was like, hey, do you have breakout rooms? And you said, not yet. And then, but you were like, stay tuned. And then I got another ping on that thread, cause I was also on the thread and they were like, yeah, let me know. And you were like, we're testing this week. And I was like, see, that's what you want to see. Right.
Yeah, true.
Like, you're really, you're, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Sorry, Dan.
No, please. We're here for you. No,
it's funny you mentioned that, because I got my, I had a few engineers screaming at me for doing that. Right? We're not ready yet. We're not ready. Stop saying we're ready. And this is the complicated bit, right? Because we've seen, we've looked at how everyone else solves breakout rooms. And we have some fantastic designers and some super smart engineers, and they're looking at it and saying, okay, but how can we improve the experience? Because what we are thinking is that if I am a user and I have to say the person running the workshop or whatever it is, say, okay, you now have to disconnect this call, dial into this room, and then you have to disconnect that call and dial back in here in 20 minutes.
Right.
That's not really a very strong user experience. So what we're aiming to do is simplify it. And again, keeping it very, very easy. But that adds a lot of complexity because we want to be able to control the whole thing from one single UI, and that you can actually just swap between these rooms without disconnecting the call, without doing anything. So basically just jumping from one session to the next, almost like you would in real life. And that's a challenge, but also super exciting. So when I said we were ready, we had to do a rollback because we pushed too hard. But that's the name of the game. You have to be, and especially for us, constantly being the underdog and having to sort of like really, really push, we have to accept that sometimes we push things too fast and we have to roll back and say, okay, let's do some more work on this. Again, part of the game.
Yeah. So let's go further into that, because I think that's part of what's really interesting about how you do that, right? So you're playing a game of UX, a very aggressive game, because this is a market where, I mean, you're staring at competitors who have become verbs, right?
Yeah.
And still everything that you do seems to be new, seems to be interesting, seems to be a different take, which is traditionally a particularly hard thing, right? You see people come into any crowded space and the word differentiation is idealized, but rarely actually meaningful or anything, right? It's very hard to be different, do anything different. But almost everything that you said is at least a slightly different take, is a slightly better UX. How does that come about, right? How do you look at what you see now? And then what does your company do? What conversations are you having that lead you to breakout rooms should look like this? Signing in should look like this?
It's a super interesting question. And there is so much to unpack in that question itself, actually. So first of all, it comes with a lot of discussions internally and a lot of debating and sometimes a lot of fighting, right? Because we have people that are so protective of the user experience, and I need them to be. But then we also have many other challenges, right? So one thing that I'll give you as an example, and being fully transparent, is that we want to be different. We want to differentiate between what we are offering and what everyone else is offering. But as you just mentioned, that comes at a high risk, right? Because we could be introducing complexity that users actually don't understand. So let's just look at our pricing plans, for instance, right? We now have a plan that is charging in a different way than from what the normal model is, right? A per user per month situation. We've done testing on our users, and the feedback that we're getting is that they like the new model, but it's also complicated for many new ones to actually understand what they're paying for compared to others, because they want to benchmark us against Zoom or us against Google or us against Microsoft. Yeah. So when you try to innovate, when you try to be different and differentiate, with that also comes a huge amount of pressure. Then, okay, are you taking it one step too far now? Are you actually leaving money on the table? Are you actually making it so complicated for the users to differentiate between what we are charging and what the normal model is that they will just default back to what they totally understand? So it's actually a super interesting challenge and something that we are balancing every single day. I have investors on one side, and I have my designers and my UX experts on one side, and marketing on one side, right? And we're trying to balance this out. But it's funny you mentioned that, because it's probably the most challenging and exciting work that we do internally. And I wish there was a right or wrong answer on this. I don't think that that's true, right? You just have to. But it also takes balls, to be honest, right? It really, really takes a lot of guts to stay true to what you're trying to achieve. Because Lord knows that there is lots of low-hanging fruit that you could tap into if you just said, okay, let's just do what everyone else is doing. We could have launched breakout rooms in the similar fashion as everyone else do months ago, right? But then we are going head to head with Zoom and trying to fight on feature parity with Zoom. And there's no way we can ever be able to do that. So it's actually in our DNA, and we have to trust ourselves and our ability to be different and building a company in the process that takes care of our employees and also gives shareholder value.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's an amazing take on differentiation. I had never thought of it that way, as the define like a step too far, right? If you over differentiate to the point where you're incomparable, because I know that in my experience with pricing in particular, right? Yeah. Everybody, the moment you say a price, there's a comparison point. I try and sell you a referral program, you compare me to a Facebook ad, right? So how much are you spending in Facebook ads? I try and sell you on, you know, this new tech, you compare me to the freemium that you're using. But if you charge in completely different ways, this happened to me a lot with payment processors. Some people would charge in particular just a percentage. Some people would charge percentage plus flat rate. Some people charged based on the number of transactions. And that was a really interesting challenge. But yeah, I respect a lot that perspective of not fighting on features, but I suppose, again, just kind of fighting on experience. Because you win even just on sign-in right now. Right. Like, I'm using you over Zoom because it's easier to send my friend a Whereby link.
Yeah. Which is sort of like part of the overall experience that we want you to have. Right. But you're so right. Like, Zoom is now a verb. And just through the power of everyone knowing about it, they are generating a tremendous amount of usage. Right. The feedback that we're getting is that there is, again, so much more to be had on making the experience just better. Because I think probably the biggest challenge that we're going to be facing is that we don't have, if we look at this whole, the whole situation holistically, right, and looking at how many users have now been thrust into 6-7 hours a day on back-to-back Zoom calls, back-to-back Microsoft Teams calls, Google Talks, or even Whereby, right? If you start putting people 6 and 7 hours into that, it's not sustainable. It's not something that you can do. And I think people have been doing it for close to a year now, and it's starting to have a serious effect in a negative way. So I think there are so many things that we can improve. And I'll share a couple of examples. So what's happened is that every interaction that you normally had in an office or at a coffee shop or something like that has now been said, okay, that needs to be on video, right? Face-to-face, but it's absolutely crazy. It really shouldn't be like that. We have to find the balance between asynchronous communication and video communication, right? Because you can't move all of these. And I probably shouldn't say this being the CEO of a video chat tool, but you have to find that balance, because if not, it's not sustainable and you will have blowback. And I was speaking to a person that I'm trying to recruit for a growth role. And she was explaining to me how she used to love one-on-ones with her teammates. She had now moved all the one-on-ones to video because there wasn't any other choice. And she'd come to really just hate them, or resent them at least, right? Because they didn't really feel like they were contributing much. And she was starting to think, why is that? And what she had found was that earlier, you had all of these great things, these verbal cues and signals that was in the one-on-one itself, because you were either out walking and having coffee together, or you were in a coffee shop, or even in a conference room at work. There were so many things to latch onto that made the whole conversation much more human and much more sticky in a sense. But Dan, if you were my manager and we were chatting to each other, and every time we spoke, you had this background, and I had your background. Imagine, just like, it's so dull. It feels like it's stale and it's not really working, right? So how can we take something as basic as a one-on-one and improve it on behalf of the users? Because if you think about what's on the market today, and again, we are to blame here as well, what's on the market today is basically services like this. And we say, well, here's a meeting platform. But we all know that meetings have different forms and different shapes and different sizes. They have different outputs. So why are we not trying to cater to that, rather than just saying, here's a meeting platform and you have to do all the heavy lifting trying to make it into something that feels reasonable for you? We can be much smarter than that. We can allow, if we see in the calendar that there is a one-on-one, how about trying to find a way to make that experience for both parties more delightful? So maybe when there's a one-on-one on the calendar, we set both up with an intro saying, hey, brilliant people, you were just sent to the Swiss Alps. And then you make sure that the setting is set around that, so we have the same sort of background and we can actually have a virtual background that takes us to a specific location to have our one-on-one. It's just something basic, right? Something small that makes the whole experience much more human and much more valued. Because I think the biggest challenge that we're going to see now with the pandemic and people moving to remote work, and this is also part of the problem with glorifying remote work, is that for managers, it's going to be so difficult to manage differently from what they used to do in an office compared to how you have to do it remotely. Two very, very different ballgames, to be honest. And we have to help educate managers and everyone to get used to this way of sort of like the new normal, as we call it. And within that, there is a lot of stuff that we need to help the users achieve. And we can do that through technology, but it will require us to be user-centric first and foremost. That was the rant. Sorry for taking up all the time here.
No, that's so interesting. I love a lot of what you just said. Are you familiar with like the jobs to be done framework?
Yeah.
I find that very interesting because I never would have thought that the jobs to be done of a video call is to, you know, make it feel more human, right? Like the thing that I need software to do for me is try and establish as close to an in-person meeting as possible, which feels like a normal statement, right? Obviously, you want a meeting to feel like a meeting, but it's very interesting how you can add potentially something so small as changing the background, as adding, you know, if we're both sitting in Hawaii right now, that honestly might make a big difference in how it feels. I would never have thought of that, but that's a very good sign that that's what you're thinking about, because that means that you're really user-centric, not just from a feature level, but you understand who you're talking about.
Absolutely true. And this is, we've done some great work on with some people that we brought into Whereby lately that is currently going through a lot of the jobs to be done framework right now, right? And so we're in the process of learning so much more. So I think you'll see so many exciting things coming from this company in the next 7-8 months, where we are actually helping to transform how the experience can be so much better. And again, coming back to that, caring number one about the user. That's because honestly, if we're not building tech to make a much better user experience, then what are we actually doing it for, right? That's the one thing that gets us up in the morning. That's the one thing that gets the company excited. We care deeply about how people actually spend time on our platform and the value that they get from it.
Oh, see, this is why I wanted to talk to you, man.
Yeah.
I can tell. I got that vibe off of Twitter and just like reading through like your other articles and like seeing your other podcasts and everything that you've done. Like it sounds stupid, but like caring is a surprisingly rare thing now, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to say it, but like it doesn't ever feel like Zoom cares, right? Nobody ever felt like Zoom had a heart to it. You know, nobody ever felt like there was any emotion there. And at most they have the little claps, right? But now we have the where's the reaction button? I know I've seen it in here.
Yeah, right? You can do the little, I can do this one for
instance. Yeah, right. Like we got these little things. Yeah. And you know, sure Zoom has a clap and everything, but this like it's not a design, right? It's an experience. And the way that you build out from that is just so powerful.
And that's the whole point, right? Because if you look at this and you say, well, that's not very difficult to replicate, that's not a killer feature. No, it's not. It's about making the whole experience more human, like we actually engage with each other when we are properly face-to-face, right? Because I don't think the world will ever go back to what it used to be, right? Just think about how many things you're doing with events and so on, right? Now you see so many new techs emerging that actually makes it so much more convenient to actually get more stuff done. You can actually be more productive by not traveling as much, for instance, right? So I think those things are, yes, we'll need to travel. Don't get me wrong. Face-to-face interactions are still going to be almost impossible to sort of bridge through video, no doubt. But again, it's coming back to that balance thing. And I think that's the frustrating thing when I look at tech today. It's almost like, we always celebrate just the massive, massive winners and sort of like the blowout companies, rather than actually seeing who is it that is caring and actually giving value long-term to users as well, rather than just thinking about how much video minutes can we cram out of squeeze out of a single person, right? It has to be about something more than that.
Yeah, it feels like building a car, right? There's like, you can have people like, you can have a Ferrari, right? Which is the fastest moving car that is arbitrarily the thing everybody will say is like, that's the one I want, right? Sure, that's your Zoom. And it's there and it exists and it does what it does, right?
Yeah.
And no one ever questions if a Ferrari can drive as well as a Tesla can drive, they'll both get you somewhere. But the way that they do it is so different, right? And like, as far as I'm concerned, like, you guys are the Tesla, right? You have all of the small details, right? You have all of the little features, all of the things that result in people like coming to you and like, nobody loves Zoom, right? Nobody cares about Zoom. Nobody will ever be like, oh God, thank God for Zoom in particular, right? But I see every single day now people tagging you guys on Twitter talking about like, oh, holy crap, right? Like, Whereby is doing something right. And even if all you did was just not have an entire install and a sign up flow, even just that one nugget of power like results in already a better platform. And then you just keep building on that and you go from, you know, building the Tesla equivalent of a skateboard to just actually a Tesla, right? Where you're going to have all of those little things and it's just going to feel like I'm living in the future, right?
Yeah.
That's, I love that about your strategy.
Yeah, and it's to be fair, right? I think it's also important because I would never dump on Zoom, right? I think Zoom has done...
Don't worry, I will.
But for our industry, Zoom has done so much, right?
Sure.
And in terms of their execution and the quality and reliability of their service is really unrivaled, right? It's so amazing what they've been able to do. So I have tremendous respect for that. But we can also at the same time say, we can praise that, but at the same time say, we think we can improve. We think that we can improve on the user experience and we want to be different. We don't want to be going head to head with Zoom. When I meet now potential investors and they're asking us, well, how are you going to challenge Zoom and how are you going to take on Zoom? Well, that's not what it's all about, right? That to me is lazy. And if that's what they're hoping to hear, then we might as well stop the meeting because then it's never going to work out. We do not want you as an investor and you should not invest in our company because that's not what we're aiming to do. And staying true to that message and staying true to what you've done so far is actually a very challenging thing from the level that we are at right now, right? Because we've now had tremendous success. We're starting to be known a lot more, but we still have so much more to improve, even from an awareness perspective, right? But then being strong enough to remain true to what you've already built and what got you here in the first place. Hugely challenging, right? And you don't even think about it because you're just hoping, okay, the next level of success will make it feel oh so worth it, right? But boom, suddenly you're at that level. Then you go, okay, now we just have to really, really step it up. So it's you just constantly, there's always that next level. And I think that's something that most people don't think about often enough and actually reflect how important it is to try and take care of what you've already built in the first place.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I'd be interested to hear kind of, for lack of a better way to put it, how did you get to this point? What brought you to this thinking, right? I mean, you were VideoNor for a decade, right? 2017, you acquire Whereby. Is that the turning point for you where it becomes all about users, all about UX? Has it always been that way? Or was it pandemic hits in February, revenue gets 4X'd, and suddenly the whole conversation changes?
No, so brilliant question. To me, it all started in 2017 when I was introduced to the co-founder at Appairin that we then acquired. Her name is Ingrid, and she's currently our chief product officer. And when we first started chatting, we actually spoke for, I think we spoke for 2 or 3 hours without even talking about the potential of merging or anything like that, right? We were just talking about how we view the industry, where it's going, and what we could actually do to speed things up. So at the end of that conversation, we just looked at each other and basically said, okay, maybe we should actually have a serious conversation about this because we're thinking about this in exactly the same terms. Funnily enough, from that merger, because I don't think I wouldn't view it as an acquisition because that sounds like VideoNor is just buying up and sort of like consuming Appairin as it was called back then. This to me was much more of a merger where you had two different not methodologies almost, but almost at that level that were joining forces, right? So Appirin had a really scalable model, really scalable tech. They also had that very strong user focus, right? How can we keep this simple? How can we make sure that the user have a delightful experience using us? And then parts of the company that I had a very strong commercial understanding, right? How do you monetize? How do you grow it? How do you actually make sure that you can hit as many users as possible? How can you architect the viral loops? How can you? So basically, by just putting this together, we saw that there is something golden here. This is super, super exciting. And so we more or less started monetizing the company in 2018. So 1st of January 2018. Grew from zero to roughly $1 million the first year, and then from $1 million to 2.1, I believe, so doubling again year two, and then February 2020, and everything changed, right? So now we're just 5x'd, so it just changed the whole game. And we went from 25 employees to just reaching 90 last week.
Wow.
In sort of like 7 months. So yeah, the whole thing is just transformed. And it's a very, very exciting time. But that also allows us a few things, but it also brings complications, right? Because we were such a small team that everyone knew each other very well. All sort of decisions were made super fast. Now we have people all over the world. We have to be much smarter in how we actually make decisions and how they are communicated. So we use a tremendous amount of asynchronous and basically putting things in writing rather than having too many video calls where two or three people are on and make decisions based on what the whole company should be doing. We understand that we need to be much smarter about how we make those decisions now. So yeah, it changes the whole game. And then now we want to make sure that as we have grown, as we are becoming much, much bigger, how do we make sure that we care for the users and put them first and actually give the value long term that is our aim, right? And not fall into the trap of thinking very short-sightedly, how can we maximize revenue for the next 2 or 3 months? So there are many levels of communications here and quite a lot of interesting discussions, to be fair.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm interested to hear, I think you probably have a unique perspective here. Not a lot of people have been through, you know, M&A, like not a lot of people have sat through a merger, an acquisition, anything like that, especially not at the executive level and moved forward from it for 3.5-4 years now.
Yeah.
So what did that look like and how has that sort of affected things? I mean, that combined with your recent growth, I imagine I can't even imagine what your job has been like recently in the past year and in the past four, how interesting that must have been.
Yeah, interesting and busy for sure. But yeah, no, as you know, right, you can read studies and you understand that most M&As go sideways, right? Because it's actually extremely complicated to achieve what you set out to achieve. And to be fair, Ingrid and I have also revisited some of our original thinking back in 2017 and said, oh boy, were we naive, right? Oh boy. So you get a lot of those where you just say, did we actually write that? And then you look at that and say, ah, come on. But that's part of it, right? You have to be able to adapt. You have to not, that's my experience and what we've seen was that we had to roll with the punches, right? We had to take the good with the bad. We had to try and make sure that we kept every part of and every sort of like DNA from both of these two together. And that's much easier said than done. But you have to be respectful and you have to understand that if you try and change things too fast at that level, you end up breaking more things than you're actually improving. So you actually have to stay true to the strategy. But with that comes this notion that you have to then adapt. And there were multiple things that we had thought would make a lot of sense that we just saw as we were progressing that doesn't make any sense. And rather sort of like sticking to that because of an ego thing or that you've said to the board that this is what we want to do, we were open about the fact that we say, hey, this is not working out the way we thought. We believe it's in the best interest of the company to do something else. And we've been extremely fortunate that we've had tremendous support from our shareholders and our board members always. So when we've said that and been open and transparent and dared to be vulnerable, right, and say, yeah, we think we might have gotten this wrong, we want to do this instead, there's always been a huge amount of trust and saying, yes, okay, we believe in what you're doing. Just go forward and make the adjustments that you feel is right. And that isn't something you can take for granted, because I've also been in companies where that is not the issue. And then you have much, much harder things to turn around.
Right. Having investors on your side is life-changing.
It sounds so basic if you think about it, right? And I can speak a lot to, but it sounds so, so basic that you would have investors that have your back. But the more I speak to people that are founders and CEOs themselves, the more I understand both how blessed and how lucky we've been, but also how poorly many investors are actually doing their job when it comes to supporting the companies that they're working for. And this is why it's so, so... You see so many companies when they're trying to find someone to hire, a VP of sales or a VP of product or a CTO or a CMO, right? We do all kinds of reference checks and we all kinds of background stuff, and we try and find as many sort of like checks as we possibly can to validate that this is the right candidate, right? We do whatever we can. But then suddenly when it comes to investors, it's so, still to this day, it's so clear that most, okay, you have a higher bid. Okay, that valuation means everything to me. But it's so crazy to think about, right? So then you're just inviting trouble onto your cap table because you focused on maximizing the valuation in a Series A. And to me, that doesn't make any sense. At a Series A, you're basically young and naive as a company at that stage. So you don't try and maximize for valuation at that level, because value creation should hopefully happen from there on and onwards. So how can you have people on your team that actually helps you get there? Because we all know that there is going to be ups and downs, right? That's just the name of the game. And you really, really want to get the best investors to actually help you through that rather than the ones that gives you the best term sheet from a valuation perspective.
I remember my favorite story about this was from a founder of, I think it's called Trolla. It's very particular, weirdly huge violin training app. And apparently a lot of people put a lot of money into learning the violin. Huge thing in some countries. Wouldn't be guessed. And the guy who started it, I saw his investor pitch. In the middle of the pitch, he says, we made $50,000 from 5 different hackathons, one of which we did while high on acid. And then this is literally at his demo day at Techstars. And the slide just like melts and he just stares at the audience straight for 30 seconds and says nothing while everyone just like looks around and awkwardly laughs. And you really had to say to yourself, like, we were like, what the hell is going on? And my friend Rachel, who used to work at Techstars, now runs a really great incubator here. She said the reason he's doing that is because he's not taking investment from anybody who's not going to live with that, right? Yeah. He's not trying to get investment from anyone who's going to disagree with this concept, from anyone who's not going to be okay with him literally just being a guy who's going to go to a hackathon on acid. And you know what? When you've got a company that's that successful, right? When you're doing that well, when you have all the right tools, you have to be able to you have to be that selfish, right? You have to purely just thinking about you, don't ruin your own company for the sake of the money.
It's absolutely true. And then to be fair, that's next level shit though. That is seriously, that is seriously a gutsy move for sure. But it's absolutely true, right? Because you don't want to, let's be honest, right? When you build a company, it's work almost, I wouldn't say 24/7, right? But it consumes every day of what you're doing, right? That's just the way it is. You have to be on it almost entirely. And if you have bad investors that are making it less fun, that are actually draining your energy rather than replenishing it when you need it, it's unbelievable to me that most investors don't get how much they're actually actually destroying the company value. It's like with sports teams, right? When you have fans on in the stadium and you see a player that you normally know is fantastic, right? Clearly struggling. What's the thing that you should do as a fan? You should support that player, right? Make sure that that player gets up to the level where you know that that player can be. If you turn on him and you start trash talking or booing, what's going to happen, right? The chances are it's going to take that player longer to get up to the level that everyone knows that they can be at. So you're not helping the situation at all. You're actually just making it much more painful, and you're destroying the chances of the team. And same with an investor in a company. If you're not adding energy to the executive team or to the CEO, you are actually a very, very bad resource. And you should then consider just getting out of the company and just taking your losses and move on. But yeah, this is still so, like I said, people don't do enough reference checks, right? They really don't look at, because you can look at how they engage with people on Twitter. There is so much you can do now to actually get a better understanding of who you're inviting onto your cap table. And I think that there is a lot to learn here, for especially probably for first time founders and first time entrepreneurs, that you just go with the one that is offering the best terms. And quite often, I'm sure that that's not the best thing for you at this stage.
Yeah, I think there's a real problem with kind of that perception of motivation, of encouragement, where people really don't give enough credit to how you feel and ensuring you feel good. Like, if you ask me what is the one thing that increases likelihood of the success of a company, I would say you being excited about it, right?
Yeah.
If you lose that excitement for a day, it doesn't take a lot to crush someone's spirit. You get one really smart person to say, this is a terrible idea, don't do it. And suddenly you're going to wake up every morning a lot sadder, right?
Yeah.
And that's just natural. And so, like, even my teammate and I, we talk about this all the time. The best mentors are the ones where we sit down and they say, I see you growing. I see you doing better. And even if things are only going okay, they will find ways to hype you back up, right? To build you up and encourage you. And just like you said with those sports fans, you know, tearing someone down, like, basically never results in a better outcome.
No.
Nowhere near as good as it could have been if you built them up. And just, I respect that a lot.
And it's so true. This whole idea that even to an extent, like you mentioned, it doesn't have to be like you're performing extremely well, but just having someone that you deeply respect praise you for the progress that you're making, that can actually recharge batteries and really, really get you going again, right? Because let's be fair, most companies of our size and at our level are going through ups and downs, right? That it's just part of the game. You have to be able to do that. But the more excitement that you can put into the dark periods, the more feel good that you are when you're actually driving towards it, the better it is. And the bigger the chances that you can actually persevere and stay resilient through really tough times. And we've had multiple times of that in this company, right, where it's been pure grit and pure determination that has gotten us to the next level. So at some level, you also have to, I wouldn't say that you normally, that you would have to love that part of it, but you also have to stay really, really solid when that is required, right? And that's something that the investors can expect from people as well when we take their money, that when the going gets tough, we will do whatever we can to make sure that we protect the investment that they have put into this. So it's definitely a two-way street. And I've also seen founders thinking that the money that they are getting is sort of like, okay, now it's art to burn and do whatever we want with. And I don't believe in that part either, right? There has to be that common, there needs to be that joint respect for each other and what you're actually bringing to the table.
For sure.
Yeah.
My brother really likes the saying, and I forget where he got this from, but motivation is like showering. You do it every day or you start to stink.
Yeah. I love it. That's good. I haven't heard that before.
Yeah. It sounds so dumb and it's just true.
Yeah.
Right? Like, people ask me every day, how do you get through the tough times? Right. Like, how do you make the annoying work, fun. How do you get through the tough days? Because nobody ever asks how you get through the easy days, right?
No.
Nobody ever cared how you got through, oh, you built an MVP in a weekend. Yeah, no crap. That was the fun part, right?
Yeah.
The hard part is how do you do the rest of it, right?
Yeah.
How do I go post on 100 Facebook groups asking people to try my garbage?
Yeah. Yeah.
And those are the days where you really have to just remind yourself like why you're doing it and everything. I'd be interested. What about you? Like, how do you keep yourself motivated? How did you get through those tough times, like on a personal level?
I think because on this one, I think every individual is different, right? And I've actually always found this deep, deep motivation when everyone thinks this can't be done. Right. So I built that muscle as well. Sort of like if I'm going to be a bit personal, right. So I've always made sure that I build that muscle when most others are willing to let it go or say, I've had enough, I'm going home, or this is not going to work out. There is something in me that lights my fire even more. And almost like to the extent that it's crazy where I see people dropping off, the more motivated I get. So that is key for me, that I've always had this built in me that I do not give up easily. And especially if I feel like if I'm doing that, I'm disappointing someone. That to me is deeply, deeply sort of that sits deeply rooted in me. I do not want to disappoint when I've promised someone or something that I will be able to get us out of this. So that's one part. Number two is probably the most important one. And then if you go through these times with people that you deeply love and respect as individuals, that changes the whole game, right? If you have people around you that you care so much about as individuals, but also as colleagues and as team players, that you get excitement from seeing them step up and help take part in solving what you're in front of. It's mind-blowing to me how that sort of camaraderie and how much strength actually comes from being a smaller group of people that believe we can actually do this. So I think that for me, earlier in my career when I was younger, I used to be a firefighter. And and it was really interesting to me how much strength two or three individuals that needed each other and had to rely on each other when you're walking into a burning building, how much that actually helps to sort of like build the overall courage of one single person, because it's amplified so many times because you feel so much stronger in a group. So I always tell people that if you're going through really, really hard times, make sure you surround yourself with people that can help you or mentor you or make it, just dare to be vulnerable in those times, right? Because I think the worst thing you can do is just go into complete lockdown mode and think that this is on me, I need to solve this all by myself. Because yes, some people will be able to do that, but I believe that your chances of success are so many times higher when you actually dare to open up and say, I'm really, I need some input and some help, right? I think that one is absolutely, and that's coming back to the kindness piece, right? It's strange, but in tech and in business in general, we are so afraid to be perceived as being vulnerable that it's actually completely hindering our ability to actually get to a desired outcome faster, right? Because let's be honest, if you can get out of a problem with your company by engaging with others faster, why wouldn't you? It actually makes total sense, right? But we are still struggling to do that as individuals. Anyway, it's a tough one for sure.
Yeah, no. I preach vulnerability so much. That was one of the lessons I learned really, really hard. And I think a lot of what you said is really interesting, how it parallels to like the live streaming, actually, because part of it is sharing the journey, right?
Yeah.
And I swear very much by showing every aspect of entrepreneurship. So half the time it's we're writing the MVP today. Half the time it's we're sending cold emails today and getting really angry responses.
Yes.
And half the time it's, wow, I am really losing motivation. Let's sit down and talk about it, right? And let's just work through it, figure out where my anxieties are. And like, it weirdly becomes a giant mental health thing. Literally on all of my streams now, I added the mental health tag. right next to the business tag, because it's such a big thing. And I think that's probably a big reason that, you know, you're able to understand. And like, I weirdly enough think that comes back to like users, right? And understanding users and experience is like, when you are that open, you get that level of empathy for others. And running a company really a lot of the time can come back to that empathy, to really understanding, like, you need to feel like you're in the Bahamas today.
Exactly. No, and I think, thank you for doing that, because I think this is so important, right? That we start sharing all the ups and downs about entrepreneurship and what's going on, right? Because it's so easy to tie everything to the glamour and think about, then you look at the most super successful entrepreneurs in the world, right? And you think that everything has been easy, but it never ever is, and it never was easy for anyone. So opening up about the difficult times and how you can actually get out of that by seeking help from each other, and again, being vulnerable, like that, open up and say, yeah, this is now seriously impacting my ability to stay motivated and to stay engaged and really, really excited about the future. Anything that someone can do to help you get out of that is just pure gold at that stage, much more useful than cash, right? Because that will only take you so far. But if you run out of steam or if you run out of motivation, then it's going to be a seriously uphill battle from there.
Definitely. I got two questions, one and then the other. First off, what do you think makes you good at your job? Like, what do you think you're best at? Why do you think you're doing a really good job so far? Why do you think you've been able to get where by this far?
It's probably something
you in particular.
Yeah, it's probably something we should ask my colleagues about. But I do think one of the things I do well is that I have a deep, deep respect for other people's jobs. So I genuinely don't believe that there is anything as an easy job. Every level of job we have at our company has a certain level of complexity. And my biggest job and my biggest concern is to make sure that I have people 10 times smarter than me doing all of those jobs. So if I'm thinking that I need to make sure that I'm the smartest one doing this job or that job or that job, or that I think I could do a better job than XYZ, that basically means that we don't have the right people in place. But I also think that significantly limits the possibilities or the possibility of the company to be successful long term. So by being respectful of other people's jobs, you also let them step up and you let them shine. You understand how valuable they are as a puzzle or as a cog in this bigger machine. And I'm just fortunate enough that I get to see all of these cogs play together and that they make a really cool and exciting business to work for. That's sort of like the biggest luxury that I have in my job, that I get to see every team player or every team lead now that we're growing, right? But every team and how what they're doing is actually improving something way over here on the marketing side. Something that product does makes marketing's job much easier, for instance. So I think if I was to, that's at least what I'm hoping I do best, is let people step up. And when they talk to me, I always lead with the fact that they know their job more than I do. And so how can I help motivate them to do more, for instance? How can I help motivate them to reach and want to go to the next level? Because unfortunately, that's also part of the job, right? I have to constantly push. And that's something that I feel every single day, that I'm the one that is pushing, because things are never, ever good enough. Things are never, ever strong enough. Things are never, ever growing fast enough. That's just the name of the game. So I have to constantly push. But being respectful of that and understanding that everyone has a level of complexity in what they're fighting, that makes it really, really important, in my opinion, right, to get the best out of people. And I think that comes down to empathy. And just really understanding. I've had multiple jobs in my career. I've had some fantastic bosses along the road. And I've just been trying to cherry pick from each of those individuals what they've done best and trying to put that into my own leadership. And obviously parts of my leadership is strong, but then there are parts that are weak. That's just, I think that's the same for everyone, right? That you're not, no one is perfect. So there are tons of things to learn and improve on. But yeah, I would say empathy and understanding the complexity of the different jobs.
I think that's beautiful. No, that's a really big one. I think there's so much to be said for trust, for faith, for knowing that you can trust somebody else to do the job better than you, and respecting that is like their position. Even at my stage, even with three people, like
yeah.
The titles, a lot of people say titles are meaningless, and maybe they are, but at the end of the day, like my CTO is the tech guy. If we disagree on a UX thing, I say, you're the dude, all you, and have that much faith that my opinion is in no way better and likely just worse. And therefore it's all on them.
But I think this is very important, right? Because it's important to challenge with good intentions, right? We have a few things that we're saying internally, right? So challenge with good intent. Because if there are certain parts of my job that I know better than the rest of the company, I fully want them to challenge my thinking, right? So that's deeply important that we don't misunderstand sort of like, okay, every tech situation, the CTO makes the decision and he knows best always, right? No, you challenge with good intent, but sooner or later, someone's going to have to make that decision and move forward. So I think that's vital, right? That you always challenge the thinking. And as long as the decision hasn't been made, there's always something that you can discuss and make sure that you're being heard. And then you mentioned something that's so important. And this is where I think we still have an old school sort of like mentality, right? Where when I was younger, people said, well, trust is earned. Just imagine that if you're hiring someone, a high paid job in the tech world today, and I'm speaking mostly in the tech business today, where you have so many motivated people to begin with, and you say trust is earned. Just imagine how far on the back foot you're actually starting. Rather than saying, when you join this company, your battery is fully charged at 100% trust, as it is with Whereby. Every time we bring on someone new, that battery is at 100%. It's up to me and my colleague to make sure that it stays at 100%. But rather than thinking that, okay, for the next 8 months, you're going from zero to charging upwards to 100% because you have to earn trust. No, when you hire people, you have to lead with trust. You have to start with that as the basic foundation for your relationship. If not, it doesn't make any sense to me. And this is something I care deeply about. You have to let people understand that you trust them 100% from the minute they start at the company. They are trusted equally across the board. And sometimes people will disappoint you and they do things that shows them that they might not be the right hire or they couldn't be trusted. But then you deal with the situation when it arises. But you have to lead with trust. I don't know what you think about that, but that's something that I feel so strongly about.
There's a quote. Do you know Gary Vaynerchuk?
Yeah.
There's a great Gary V quote about exactly this. Literally, my teammate posted it. We have a motivation channel in Slack. Posted it yesterday. He says, you know why people like me? Because I like them first. They have my trust. And it's theirs to lose.
Yeah. But imagine then today that in 2021, we still have companies that are living by this idea that you have to earn trust. It's mind-blowing to me how you actually think and value your resources and what you have as a company when trust has to be earned in 2021. It's strange. I really can't understand why it's like that.
I think it's ego at some very, very low level, right? I think, you know, I'll compare this to Twitch again, because I think streaming is a really good parallel to a lot of stuff, right? New viewer comes into my chat day one and I say, hey, bud, thank you so much for coming by. Appreciate you coming by. Hope you're having a good day, right? Yeah. Never talked to that person in my life. They don't even have to have said something in chat yet. I assume they're a good person. Now, do some of them prove me wrong? Absolutely. Do some of them come in and tell me like, hey, you're ugly and I hate you? Absolutely. You know what? And to them, I say, that's fair. And I ban them immediately and move on with my life.
Exactly.
But, you know, my teammate and I talk about this all the time, right? Like, leading with kindness is just objectively correct, right?
Yeah.
Like leading with kindness will always make things better, will always lead you to be happier, will just lead the world to be a better place. And to ever not do that is to come into a conversation and say, I'm better than you, right?
Yeah.
And to say like, I only trust me, everyone else is bad at things.
Yeah.
Even if you're not saying it out loud, that's how it is internally. So I have a lot of respect for that trust.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting that one, right? And if you think about where the world is going as well, where you see in politics, in things that are happening in Europe and what's happening in the US, right? Where it seems like this empathy thing is something that we're losing sight of, right? Rather than trying to understand where people are coming from and actually listening to what they're saying and trying to understand, rather than just putting them immediately in right or left or just putting them into some sort of a bucket where it fits your narrative, right? Just listen instead and try and understand. Make an effort to really see what's happening and not sort of put people in this corner or that corner or on the right or on the left. Listen to people, try and engage them with empathy and understanding. It should be so basic, and it feels to me like the world is moving so far away from that. And that's why I believe that we that are in the tech industry have a very, very strong responsibility to bring that forward.
Definitely. Yeah. I got a DM on Twitter recently from somebody, came just completely out of the blue, and they said, hey, I don't know who else to talk to about this, but you know, appreciate your stream, see you live all the time. And they basically kind of went into how they were feeling like crap about themselves, about their startup, and they were really like struggling with imposter syndrome. They said they kept comparing themselves to everybody else and they didn't really know what to do. And I didn't respond with don't feel that way. I didn't respond with that's irrational, be better. I responded with, man, me too.
Yeah.
Every day. Like every single day, I have to get myself out of that, right? I have to walk myself out of those feelings. And if for some reason you've decided to look up to me even an ounce, please know that in that respect, we are absolutely equal. In no way are you alone. Most people are not alone. Some of the most depressed people I know are also the most successful, right?
Yeah.
I met a lot of sad people at Facebook. You know, I met a lot of sad people at Microsoft. And that's just reality. Like, it's not like we're suddenly, you don't have anything figured out, right? And that's a lot of what I really hope to achieve here, is like opening that up and proving that, like, I don't want to say CEOs are people too, but like nobody has become a better person, right? Like nobody has everything figured out, but we all learn a lot of different lessons. There's this progression, but yeah, life's just hard.
Yeah, no, and I think you're so right. This is exactly the issue, right? We deep down, we're all the same. Right, we breathe the same air. We have the same needs, and so putting people on a pedestal and thinking that, ooh, they have everything sorted out, and ooh, they know everything. It's just nonsense, right? We all suffer from insecurities, and we all suffer from lack of motivation, and imposter syndrome, I think, is probably one of the most accurate descriptions that you can find, and especially in this in the tech world, where we put people on a pedestal, right? So anytime someone has done a successful XYZ, right, we put them forward like they're a god, and it's just crazy, right? We can learn and understand and trying to do better in what we're doing ourselves, but at the end of the day, everyone is more or less the same and are struggling with the insecurities. It was a fantastic article in the Financial Times in the UK that a colleague of mine shared with me this Saturday, and it was about this problem. So the author was basically saying that the problem is that we are trying to wrap every painful feeling up and make it go away, rather than embracing and saying that feeling discomfort and feeling sort of like sometimes that things are not easy is actually a vital part of being a human being, right? If we take that away, right, it doesn't, we think that that helps in any way, but it really doesn't. If you take away everything that gives you discomfort and you try and say that you're now triggering me or I'm out of my safe space, right? Those things are actually not good, because we have to live with a certain amount of discomfort, because that's what part of being a human being is all about. We have good days, we have bad days. and starting to normalize that rather than trying to take all the discomfort away, I think it's hugely important. And I love the way you explained when you said to that person that stop feeling like that, or get out of it, or snap out of it, or but just empathizing, right? And saying, yeah, I feel you. I have exactly the same situations. That is caring, like next level.
I very recently, and you know, I do like I talk about mental health with respect to me on this stream a lot, right? And I like work through my own problems on this stream a lot. Like I want people to see it. And honestly, it just helps me to think, right? And one of the most recent big kind of realizations I came to is growth at a personal level takes an astounding amount of bravery.
Yeah.
Where you have to be brave enough to overcome the shame of trying and failing and being where you are. You know, like there's so like shame is a very like a word I use in particular, shame and fear. They go hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
And like the example I make is like brushing my teeth, right? I used to brush my teeth once a day, every day in the morning in the shower. And that was it. And everybody always told me, you got to brush your teeth twice per day. And I literally said, I can't brush my teeth more than once. I am physically incapable. And it took me like 2 hours straight of writing out my feelings one day to recognize. The reason I kept saying that is because I was afraid of actually doing the work to make it happen and of failing at doing it, right? I didn't want to set up an expectation for myself that I could fail because we're so afraid of failing, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't have the expectation, you can't fail, right? And then you just work yourself into this little hole where you're simultaneously sad that you're not here and too afraid to try. And that is just two negative emotions. But when you multiply negative emotions, you don't get a positive, right? It just goes further down.
Yeah.
And it's the worst thing ever. And so I literally had to write down, like I had to force myself to write down the sentence, I'm going to brush my teeth 3 times a day. And do I do it every day? No. But you know what? In the past 2 weeks, I've brushed my teeth like 60 times, 45, 50 times or something. And I've brushed my teeth more in the past 2 weeks than I probably did in the month or two prior. Exactly. Even though most days, like, you know, 3 days a week, I only get it done once. But four of those days, I get it done 3 times. Do I feel a little bad every day now? Yeah. But I feel way better overall. And that's the really, really hard mountain to climb, is the mountain of being willing to try, the mountain of like recognizing that shame and that fear and taking a step in that direction and being willing to let yourself feel it and not run away from it.
It's so, so important, right? What you're saying here, like embracing that, because just like you said, growth comes at a cost, right? Regardless of how you slice and define growth in what scenario or whatever, but let's use it as us as individuals, as humans, right? Growing as a person, that cannot be totally without discomfort. It's impossible, because that means you're not growing at the level that you actually can. So you have to embrace the chance that you could be failing. You have to set yourself up to allow even to make that and saying, ooh, I missed my target today. But growth has to involve some sort of discomfort, because if not, it just wouldn't work, right? It has to be part of it. And it's frustrating when you see people that think that it shouldn't really be like that, right? It should come easy. But things, being a human is not easy. Like being a human being comes with a certain amount of discomfort, and we should be open about that, talking about that, rather than trying to make it go away. Because I think that is setting ourselves up for a massive blowback, because you can't make it go away.
No, you can't. And I think, you put it perfectly, right? Recognizing that bad feelings don't make you bad. You don't feel bad because you are bad. The only difference between the people who are where you want to be and you is that they felt the same way, and then they stared at those feelings and finally slowly built up the bravery to move forward with them. Like my teammate Jake does sales every day, right?
Yeah.
I tell him I hate sales because I have anxiety. And I used to think he had gotten over it. At one point he said to me, do you think I don't get anxious on sales calls? You think I don't feel like crap every time I get a rejection? No, I absolutely still feel that way. I still feel that way every single time. I'm just getting better at dealing with it. And that's it, right? I mean, there's a show, Big Mouth, that we have, and it's about like a bunch of little 13-year-old kids struggling with, like, they get depression, but it's a giant cat that follows them around, and they got like the anxiety mosquitoes and stuff. End of the show, spoilers, I guess, they don't get over those things. The depression doesn't go away and the anxiety doesn't stop, but they start learning methods to shrink them down. And so the cat goes from being the size of the person to being like able to be held in their palm. The mosquito goes from the size of their head to a regular mosquito size, but they don't go away, right? Yeah. They just become manageable. And that's kind of the big thing that I've come to learn. It's like, you just have to, like, it's not, you don't just win, right? It doesn't, like, it's not a whiteboard full of text that you erase and then you win, right? No. There's always going to be marks there. You just kind of get slightly better. That's all you need to be, is slightly better.
It's absolutely true. I'll tell you one of the things I hate more than anything in the world is being at networking events. Like, I absolutely can't stand it. My people that know me think that I'm so extrovert and that I slide into any conversation without a problem, right? But I work at it, and I have been working at it for 20 years of my career. I've been trying to improve it. Every single time I go into a conference, and I know I have to network and do sort of like chatting to people and that kind of stuff, I hate every single minute leading up to it, right? But you just have to go and try and do it. And it does. Every single time I go home from one of those, I'm completely exhausted. But at the same time, I'm proud of myself that, okay, you did it today again, right? You just pushed through it. You actually made it. Yeah, it gave me a lot of discomfort. I would pay to be at some at another location. But it's just part of what you have to get through. And I think if people can, again, start talking about that and embracing that and saying, well, yeah, we have our quirks, we have our things that we don't like and things that we do like, but not shunning away from everything that gives you discomfort, but tackling that head on and saying, yeah, I'm going to try and overwin this. I'm going to try and make this into something that I can actually manage myself. But yeah, it's easy to say, but it's tough to do, right? And it requires a lot of, like you said, you've been brushing your teeth like a crazy man. Like, make sure you don't turn into 1,000 a day now.
Yeah, it really speaks to like, the human brain is dumb and will lead you down a bad path. Like, you have to think yourself out of it. Like, I was afraid of brushing my teeth. I mean, it doesn't get like more ridiculous than 6 minutes a day, 4 minutes on for most people. And I was like, never. I'm afraid. I would cry myself to sleep at night thinking about brushing my flipping teeth. Like, how did it get to that point? And like, that happens with so many people, right? That'll happen with a sales conversation. You'll get so anxious. You'll feel so bad. And the reality is almost never as bad as you're telling yourself it is. It's not even 10% that bad. Most things are actually fine. And even if they're not fine in the moment, they'll be fine later. You know what happens after a sales rejection? Nothing. You wake up the next day and you never talk to them again, and that's it, right? Like, it's just gone. It's not real anymore. And really embracing that is super tough.
I think it's so, but it's absolutely vital that we build that muscle, right? That we make sure that we can actually do that, because if not, it's achieving anything is going to be difficult, right? And that not even talking about like personal things, like professional things in your career in terms of achievement, but just getting through college, just getting your first job. Like, if you remove any sort of discomfort, you are setting yourself up for failure long term, right? It's so difficult. So I think that's one of the key things that we should start talking about more, like embracing that, discomfort comes with being a human being. Sorry, that's just the way it is, but talking about it and how can we manage it rather than just not talking about it. I think that's the key part here.
Yeah. You're not a bad person for feeling bad.
No, absolutely not, right? You're human, pure and simple. Right? You're just like everyone else. You're just like me. You're just like you.
Is there anything that you're working on personally right now? Anything that you're trying to improve on? Be it work, be it personal?
Yeah, I'm trying to strike a better balance in terms of best way to put this, right? So I have a family. And so when you are this consumed with work, as you can imagine, with the stuff that we've gone through, right? So it's extremely difficult to have any sort of work-life balance, for me at least, at the scale and at the stage we're at right now, right? So you work weekends, you work long hours every single day, That's just part of it, right? But then how can I, when I then take a few hours off, how am I as a parent? How am I as a father to my two boys? And I get so consumed with my work that it's actually difficult for me to make sure that I actually have deep quality when I'm with them as well. So that's something that I'm working on. And I think I can, I'll admit that's something that I'm not very happy about and something that I actually work at. But that's tough. That also comes with deep discomfort, right? Because my mind and everything says, well, just do a bit more work and then you'll spend half an hour with the boys with quality, right? But then boom, suddenly a Slack message comes up and one of our sales reps is about to close a major deal. And I know my head will go, boom, that's awesome, right? So trying to find that balance of being a parent while building a company like we're doing right now. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. That's not something that's unique for me by any chance. But for me right now, with the where we're at, something that I'm trying to work at. But right now, failing miserably, I have to admit. So that is tough. And you feel it every day.
Take me a step into that. Is there anything that you're like literal concrete things that you're trying to do right now? Or is it more of just kind of this feeling and something that you're looking at?
Yeah, no. So I've recently started trying to sort of block at least an hour a day in my calendar, right, where I get to spend some quality time. And I'm thinking, because I remember I grew up in a family where everyone were working hard as well. But one of the key things I remember from being younger is that we quite often, my parents would set aside time for us to have dinner together. Right. So it could be something as basic as that, just sitting down with the family and have dinner and then take your phone and just leave it on the side of the counter. So unless it's a big emergency, you can actually finish 25 minutes of a meal and being in that zone with the family. So that helps a huge amount. So if you can do that, because that's what I think back when I remember my childhood, my parents were working a lot, both of them. But when we sat down for dinner, that was sort of like key golden family time. So that's something that I'm trying to replicate as well. But then my wife is a paramedic and she works shifts. So all over, and with the pandemic as well. So you can imagine we're two parents right now that are feeling it, that we haven't been really, there's no parent of the year awards being handed out in this household this year, but we'll aim to make it better for 2021.
How often do you guys manage to have dinner all together?
On average, I would say 2 days a week during sort of like the weekdays. But then we try and make, we are very clear during the weekend. So Friday and Saturday, we have dinner together. But to be fair, the boys are also growing up now. So one is 9 and the other is 12. And their father is not cool anymore, right? We're quickly getting into that scenario where I'm a dork and not a cool guy. So even though when I told them today that I was going to be on Twitch, they were really, really excited because now they think I'm an influencer. So just if they ask, Dan, you have to build that, make me look good, please.
Oh, definitely. I told you, you know, some of the stuff that I try and push on the stream, but, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, me as just some kid with a startup saying a bunch of this stuff only means so much, right? You take someone important, you take someone big, someone who's looking at, I mean, 8 digits of revenue right now, right? And have them say, yeah, life's hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still struggling. Like, yeah, I miss my family, right? It says a lot, right? So yes, you are very cool and very much have added to this channel, like, and these words will carry. And so
I appreciate that, and thanks for saying that. But we're just the same, right? Right now, I'm deeply impressed with your ability to make me feel extremely at ease, and the way this conversation is going, because that's not easy, right? So I've now completely forgotten that I am the CEO at Whereby, and I feel like I'm Oyvind now talking to Dan, and it's actually hugely refreshing. So there's a special talent there. You should definitely nurture that and take it forward.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That is my one goal, so I'm not going to lie. That made me feel very good. I am definitely still unsure of this whole interview thing, but hopeful that we can have more conversations like these. I think we're going to be able to get a lot done. If there are enough of these conversations out there, it's going to make a lot more people feel better. Because a lot of the people in my chat are software engineers at big companies or at startups or people who are like have an interest in these things.
Yeah.
So making it more real for people, like bringing it down to the humanity, because like every single person has imposter syndrome. Every single person is questioning themselves, and so are we.
It's so true, right? And talking when you mentioned that some of your viewers are software engineers at larger companies, right? I'm just thinking that for them, that could have been the whole dream all along, right? That you either get a job for Facebook or Google or Microsoft or whatever it is, right? But at the same time, if that doesn't make you happy when you finally get there, make sure you make the right choice for yourself, right? Don't stay because it made sense. Coming back to what I mentioned about the acquisition, right? That what made sense when we wrote it down doesn't make sense or didn't make sense a year after. And then just drop the ego at the door and say, yeah, well, why would you stick to a decision that made sense then, but it doesn't now? That's part of, again, growing. That's part of making that transition as a human, right? And making sure that you do things that make you happy. Because let's be fair, at the end of the day, if you don't live your life in a way that's meaningful and gives you joy and happiness, then what the hell is it all for? Right? Honestly, like, because most of us are never going to be an Elon Musk, right? And thank God, because we can only have so many, right? But the rest, you have to seek that. What gives you joy? What makes you happy? What is it that you're trying to achieve? And taking, looking at that and not thinking what everyone else is thinking on your behalf. You have to make that decision yourself and make sure you spend time doing something that makes you happy.
And I think such a hard part of that is recognizing that doing something that makes you happy doesn't magically mean you're always happy. It doesn't magically mean every day is easy. And I think that's like a very, very common misconception that really hurts a lot of people, right? Like we even just said in five different ways, right? Like it's like we're trying to grow. Everything is hard, constantly hard every day. But the key is, and like, you know, maybe a rewording or an alternate version is like, live to make yourself proud.
Yeah.
Just be proud of who you are or try to be, right? Live to become someone you would be proud to be, someone you would be proud to tell people you are, not because you care what they think, but because you're so proud of yourself. I used to be exactly who you described, right? I got into college and I dreamed of ever working for a tech company. Mm. 2 years later, like sophomore year, summer, I had an internship at Microsoft. Following summer, I went to Facebook. And after that, I was like, wow, I walked into Facebook day one and they said, congratulations, you are one of 2,743 interns. And I said, wow, all right. I thought I was going to be proud of this, but I'm not proud of this. There's 2,700 of me. I don't like those odds, right? And had to take a step further and say, you know, clearly this isn't satisfying enough for me. So what's going to be, right? Like, who would I be proud to be? And I took a look at people like Peter Levels, right? People like you who have put so much time in, who have learned all these things about working with others, who can like lead a company like this, who can think at this level. And that's the kind of thing that I want to be, right? That's who I want to be proud of. So I think recognizing like, who do you want to be that you will be proud of?
Yeah.
Right. That's so important.
Was that the reason that you then decided that wasn't what you were aiming for when you sort of like had that intern period at Facebook and you just realized that no? What was that like for you when you sort of like came to that realization?
So I'm extremely open with everybody about this kind of concept. Like I am in startups because I want to feel special, right?
Yeah.
Like I want to feel like the guy, right? I want to feel like I have truly lived up to whatever potential there is. And I constantly move that bar. And so when I first got into college, that bar was big tech company. And then when I hit big tech company and I walked in and there were 10,000 engineers at Facebook, 2,500 of them were interns. I said like, man, and this is only one company. That means there's 20, 30, 40,000 of me out there. And I can't Like, you know, I don't like, you can't rank versus that, right? And it's a terrible way to think about life. But I remember sitting there and I said, like, this just isn't it. You know, I sat there, I wrote my code 35, 40 hours a week. I had every meal served to me. My apartment was paid for. I had a king bed for the only time in my life. All the cookware was there. I never had to cook. I got wings every weekend from Wingstop, $30 of wings. I was living the dream. I was making a ridiculous, like, just stupid money for a kid that age, right? Like the equivalent to six figures, but at a 3 month period. And I literally sat there and I said, this just doesn't make me proud, right? Like I have checked off this box and I'm proud to have worked there, but now I have to change the expectation because that line, like I passed that finish line, but the race can't be over. I've got like 60 more years of racing. I need a new line. Right. And so a lot of people, when I talk to them now, they're like, "Oh, you worked at Facebook. Like, that's amazing. Like, what else could you ever want to do with life?" And I was like, yeah, that was the question I asked myself. You know, like I hit 2019 and I was like, well, I'm not going to get super excited to go to Snapchat, right? I'm not going to get super excited to go to Uber. Like they're all kind of the same at this point. The only way is to really take that big dive, right? The only way is to like take a step further and say, okay, I guess I'm going to start a startup now, right?
Yeah.
Like if I wanted to be a millionaire, I'd go work at Facebook for a decade, right?
Yeah.
So who gives a crap, right? I don't care about the money anymore. I care about the achievement because the money will always be there for me personally.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, huge, huge privilege.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that moment for me, well, really, it was first when I was at Intuit 2 years earlier, a year and a half earlier. It was spring of 2018. And I remember it was great job, great team, but I would work during the day. I went home and I did nothing. And I just did nothing all day when I got home. Sometimes I went rock climbing and I was like, man, like, what do I want out of life? And I remembered me as a kid, like I used to sell stuff on the bus. I would buy gum from the gas station, sell it at a 10 times markup on the bus. I made beef jerky. I made a beef jerky, homemade beef jerky business with my friend. Yeah, I didn't even make the beef jerky. He made the beef jerky. I bought him a dehydrator and he gave me 50% of the profits. That was my investment and my return. And I became a little salesman. And I got to this point where I was like, I had the job lined up with Microsoft. I was working at Intuit and I went, man, what happened to that kid?
Yeah.
You know? And so it was this combination of realizing that I had kind of crossed this barrier for myself and that there was a part of me that I had sort of ignored for like several years for the sake of achieving this intermediate goal of hitting a big tech company. And so when those things kind of combined, I said like, well, crap, I got to go do something else now.
And there's no doubt that there is something entrepreneurial within you for sure, right?
Thank you.
Yeah. No, but it's interesting once you get to that when you get to that realization, right? And to be fair, Dan, right? A lot of people that had gotten into that would, again, so easily just stay there because it's convenient, right? You get the meals, you get the wings, you get all the perks, right? And so again, talking about discomfort, right? Leaving that and saying, okay, what's next? I don't know, but I'm just going to go and venture out and find out. It's going to be saying goodbye to the king bed. Yeah, that's going to be tough, right? But it's part of that level is that you need that level of discomfort sometimes.
Yeah, it was and I think a big thing, a question I got a lot is like, how did you take the jump? Right? Because it seems like such a huge jump. It seems like I went all the way from up at Facebook and dived all the way down to startups. And I think it's important for a lot of people to understand that, at least for me personally, it doesn't have to be one day you just snap and it's different, right? Yeah. It doesn't have to be one day you start working on it, right?
Like, no.
It was a progression for me. First, I was at school and I started working on this as a side project with my team during classes. Then I took the next semester and went into like a mini incubator program at my school. And I did it while also being chairman of some organization. And then over the summer, I literally worked at Facebook. And then I worked on this on the side. And then only after a year of having worked on the project and slowly getting deeper into it, slowly deciding I'm not going to take classes, then deciding like, okay, I'm going to work at Facebook just so that I have the money to like have enough savings. And then we moved to Chicago, right? Yeah. So it was like little steps, right? You start working on the side project first, you know, you learn about what all of these things look like. You learn about like the landing pages and everything. You can launch a whole freaking startup without ever quitting your day job. We got Product Hunt now, right? You don't even need anything else. And so I think there's also like kind of, this is a bit of a tangent, but this huge sort of misconception, like miscongruency, where people will conflate being an entrepreneur and like working on a startup. Like you can absolutely do one without being the other if you want to,
yeah.
Right? Like there's a whole spectrum in between that you can be, and there's nothing wrong with being anywhere on there. In fact, I'm proud as hell of you if you even decided to step foot on it.
Yeah. This one is absolutely vital, and we really haven't touched on this, right? But the point is that not everyone is built to be an entrepreneur. And again, thank God for that. Not everyone is built to be part of a startup. And again, thank God for that. We do, like, again, balance is so vital here, right? Like, I think sometimes people have a tendency to speak in such glamorous terms about being an entrepreneur and a founder or working at a startup, right? But to be fair, working at a startup and a fast-growing startup does come with a lot of stress because you're constantly being pushed. It's never, ever enough. If you get to one level, there is just a new level waiting for you. That goes for if you're a tiny startup like we are, or if you're Salesforce, right? There is always the next level. And sometimes people want to find something that makes them genuinely happy, but it doesn't have that level of stress associated with it. And I have deep respect for that. I think that that is so good, right? We need to start respecting every single, again, coming back to that, every single job deserves recognition and respect because they all come with levels of complexity. Some are more stressful than others, yes. If you're a salesperson at a startup today and you don't perform, you're out of a job very, very, very quickly. Right. So stepping into that, you need to know what you're getting yourself into and if that is something that will make you happy and make you go through that discomfort. And if the answer is yes, you should definitely make the step and try it out. Because that's part of this as well, that in our world today, and especially in tech, the ones we as individuals fortunate enough to work in tech, there is so much opportunity there that you really can't. Like taking a chance and trying something doesn't mean that you've burned every bridge behind you to go back, right? So you can actually dare to test a few things along. You don't have to worry too much about making a leap and saying, okay, I'm going to try this. And if it doesn't work, well, let's just admit that and then go back.
Right. Yeah, no, and that's a huge one. Like you don't have, like not burning the bridges. I really like that concept, right? And I constantly talk about that. Like I have so many backup plans, right?
Yeah.
So many. I still intentionally have not graduated college. I am currently taking my last class online. And that was because I wanted to maintain my status as a student as long as possible. Because if I was a student, I could go be an intern. And if I can be an intern, I can get a full-time job easily. And that was always the just in case, right? And then it also let me apply to a bunch of startup competitions where I'm a student, right? And you know, I'm 22. It's not like I'm that far out. But yeah, there's also this concept of like, there's nothing wrong with being happy at a big tech company.
No. Right?
Like there's nothing wrong with stability. And I actually hate that I think it's really classic right now to think like entrepreneurship is correct. Startups are right, or the thing that you have to do. Like I am so jealous of people that work at Facebook and are happy. Man, holy crap. Yeah. Oh, I wish I had been happy there. Man, if I had been happy there, life would have been so simple. It would have been so easy. I could still be eating the free barbecue that they had there. And it was so good. It was so good. If you go to Facebook, like feeling content is a privilege, you know, feeling that happiness is a privilege. I hate that I don't feel that, but that is my reality. That is our reality. It's just that we can't be happy there. And so when you say not everybody's built to be an entrepreneur, like, I don't want anybody to take that as like, that's not like a negative, right? That doesn't mean like you're not good enough to be an entrepreneur. Like it's just different and that's okay. Like I achieved my goal at that time and then realized that that goal made me unhappy. But if that goal makes you happy, holy crap, you did it. My brother, he's in sales right now. He hates it. And he literally kill for the stability and comfort that I had. And I guarantee you, he would be happy till the day he died at Facebook. But I know for me, I'll never get there. Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's just never going to be enough for me. But that's, and I think just this, different. That's not right.
Exactly. It's just different. Right. And owning that and coming to terms with it, because I think that's the biggest challenge we have. Right. That we're constantly chasing something and thinking that this next thing is going to be the one that makes me perfect. but it never is, right? So you just have to take the good with the bad and roll with the punches, and make sure that you try and find a happy medium and make yourself happy. And that's why you have to enjoy the small things as well, right? You have to enjoy the small wins that you have in your personal life or in your professional life, or even watching, again, a sports team, right? You have to actually have the small things that makes you happy, because life is about highs and lows. And if you don't have highs and lows, you'll lead, in my opinion, a very boring life. Like there is nothing. You need the lows to really appreciate the highs.
Definitely. I mean, yeah. I've had my biggest, like, you know, I call them like comebacks, right? Like it takes getting really low. You know, like I had a, you know, not even that long ago, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, was like the night when I really had that whole conversation about like brushing my teeth, right?
Yeah.
And obviously there are a lot of other things that were in that, but like I'll use that as the example. And like, I felt terrible, right? Like the worst I'd felt in so long. And I was like spiraling for like a week, and I had to hit that lowest point and then finally just say, I need to sit down and think through this. And I sat down and I thought through it. And the next day was the best day I had had in weeks, right?
Yeah.
But I was only able to have that high because I got to that low, right? Yeah. And that's like, that's life. To expect, like, to think that the people who you, especially with Twitch, where, like, you know, it's like half of an act, right? And so you see a lot of people on here and it always seems like they're happy. And it's like, you know, I think even we have, you know, a couple of my other streamer friends in here, and some of them were saying like, yeah, I have to like question my own self-worth before I go live, right? Like when you're in front of the camera, it's really easy to pretend to be somebody, right? When you're doing a podcast or you're doing an interview, when, you know, You it's like the classic social media-ism, like you're watching everyone else's highlight reel because nobody's going to show you the rest, because why would they? But like, nobody's just a highlight reel. Most of the time is not the highlight reel. The largest amount of time is the struggle. But yeah, I think, and as some people are saying in chat, like the really interesting stuff is like being open about that, right? Being able to show those frustrations, show those difficulties, working through them, like present, going down rant there, but
It's super interesting, right? And I think this is, again, coming back to, I think if we're to summarize what we've been talking about today, it's more or less openness, right? Just being okay with being open and transparent and saying things like you actually feel them. I think it's such a vital part of mental health and our ability to perform and as to be individuals, right? If we can increase the level of openness, but with that, like I've said before, it's deeply important that you mentioned it as well, that we don't, happiness is not about being happy every single moment of the day. Like that just doesn't exist. So that notion, that concept is something that I think we should just forget about and say, you have to embrace the discomfort as well. If not, it's not going to work long term.
Yeah, and embrace. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, and combining that with the openness, right? If we can get to that level, that's when we can actually start to do some really good things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that word embrace, right? Embrace doesn't mean push through. It doesn't mean have an astounding amount of grit and like flex your muscles and just ignore the pain, right?
No.
Like the only way I've ever worked through anything is I sit with it. I think through it. I take a lot of time and work through it over many weeks and months and years even.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where the growth happens, is not in being some super hardworking, super no questions asked, like, you know, people who just like grind 18 hours a day. Like, no, you become a better person by thinking. You become a better person by being kind to yourself first and others second. And then everything else will slowly come. But being comfortable with yourself and confident in, like, in your heart, just about you enough that you can let yourself grow, that you can have that bravery to start growing. That's where you really win.
No doubt. Yeah, that's beautiful said. I think that's something that to aspire to for sure. But like we said, right, that's not an easy thing to get to. So
no, and it never will be, right?
No,
but that's kind of the thing, right?
Yeah.
Stuff is hard, but that doesn't make it bad. And doing hard things takes bravery because they are hard. And that doesn't mean starting a startup. Sometimes that means brushing your freaking teeth.
Yeah. I'm gonna remember that one for sure.
Oh, great. Thanks
for sharing that one.
I'm walking myself into a box here. I'm going to be known as, like, you know that guy who doesn't brush his teeth on Twitch? What's his name? The one with just the dirty, disgusting breath, like, just won't stop talking. You know that guy? You know,
10 years from now, that's the Dan with the teeth, right? But that's a legacy, too.
That's my legacy. I walk into an interview. So, Dan, I've heard that you don't brush your teeth. And I'm just going to be like, you want me to count off all my root canals? You want me to point them all out? Like, oh my god, what a nightmare I've built here.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Honestly, I have other questions. Sure, there are a lot of other ways we could go here. Yeah, but I can't think of a better moment to close out here. I think this is about perfect. I know you mentioned you had to go at around 2 hours, so I imagine we're closing in on that. Not a problem at all. Absolutely no worries. Sincerely, thank you so much for coming on. This is, like I said, great having people on here, having people be open. I'm gonna post this everywhere and let the world know that Øyvind Reed is a real person with real feelings. And to have had the CEO of Whereby, an 8-figure revenue company, come on here and say earnestly, something so open as, I'm worried about being a good father, speaks volumes about who you are and the company that you run. And I'm really excited to see where you guys go and where you go in particular.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've had a blast, and I was actually quite worried that I wouldn't be able to sort of like have this. You mentioned it, right? We're just going to have a conversation. We didn't share the questions. There was nothing, right? So I was a bit concerned how well would that work, but you've been brilliant. So I've really, really enjoyed this. And I hope that this takes off and that you get a lot of great guests. If you need a reference, please do let me know, and I'll happy to assist.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely might take you up on that. I'm gonna need a lot of those references. But between you and Peter, I should have access to just about everybody in the world.
Well, we'll see about that. But thank you again so much for having me, and best of luck. And let's stay in touch. All right, it's been super, super interesting chatting to you.
Definitely. I'll bug you on Twitter.
All right. Perfect. Take care.
Cheers, man. Have a great
day. Cheers. Bye-bye.
All right, guys.